Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit matchup to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Are you listening? You're listening to Brent FC.
Hello, Ranks Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. If you can tell by the excitement in my voice, it's a Europa League special. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me is the Rank God, Mr. Sam Tai.
Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. And, of course, our transfer titan, Mr. Dean Jones.
Hello, mate.
Hello, mate. I mean, I don't think either of you are quite as excited about this as I am, but I'd imagine that there's a fair bit of ground to cover here. This is basically like one long things I love for the whole episode. So we're not going to do things we love, but before we go piling into the Europa League, I do want to talk quickly about Marco Rose becoming the new Dortmund manager, or being announced as the new Dortmund manager from next season, Sam. This is oh, a reasonably big appointment. I think quite a lot of people foresaw it in that it seemed like the sensible appointment, but getting it over the line is big for Dortmund.
Yeah, I mean, according to my agenda, it is the second most important thing to talk about today, second only to the fact that it's Pancake Day, Shrove Tuesday. That's just before we get into Marco Rose. Before
it won't
we get
be by the time this is out.
Well, when we're recording, I mean, I've already had my pancakes for lunch. Have you guys had yours yet?
I haven't had any pancakes yet.
No.
Are you going to have some for dinner, though?
Yeah, probably.
I am, actually. Yeah. It's all ready to go, mate.
How do you go? Are you a traditionalist? Are you lemon and sugar? Are you sweet? Are you savoury?
Well, don't forget, I've got an American wife, so we have two types of pancakes.
Ah, of course.
So we have American pancakes, and we also have English. And Dylan's the fussiest eater in the world, so we'll give him both options, and he will eat neither. He will probably just have, like, fries.
And I presume by English you mean French crepes.
French, yeah, obviously. Yes. And Reese will eat both. I'll probably go French. I just like lemon and sugar, to be honest.
Really do. I'm a traditionalist with Dean here. And also, yeah, I don't really like fat pancakes. They have to be thin, I think, to really get the get things off.
I wouldn't have one just to be polite to Taylor, but
yeah, lemon and sugar on a crepe, and I'm a happy boy. I really don't ask for much in this life, I'm afraid. No. One of my family friends has salt and lemon on her pancakes, and I don't know what to do about it.
That must have been a mistake.
No. Shot of tequila or something.
I don't know. I don't know what she's doing with it, but I can guarantee you that I have seen her ask for salt on pancake day, and I was like, right, you just do you. I'm gonna stay well away from that kind of heathen horribleness over on that side. That's my pancake day story. Right, Marco Rose.
Of course, Marco Rose. Let's give him his dues. I mean, look, for Dortmund, this is good news because just about any qualified manager at this point would be a huge upgrade on Edin Terzic. They've just got worse under his tutelage so far, and it's a shame for them that they can't get Rose in immediately, because the Dortmund team does feel like a bit of a mess. It does feel pretty uncoordinated, pretty disorganized. It feels like it's only going to get worse as well. According to everyone on my Twitter feed that closely follows and covers Bundesliga, Marco Rose is a really good personality fit for Dortmund, which is very, very important for every club, but seems particularly important for Dortmund. Dean, you've written in the past about sort of the church of Jurgen Klopp at Dortmund and their search for a man and a manager who really suits them as a club and their ideology and their personality. And by all accounts, Rose is that kind of guy. So there's one tick. And the other tick is that tactically he's very good, works very well with young players, comes out of the Red Bull coaching tree, which is something we will get onto later on in this episode as well, with a couple of other guys that really stand out in this area. But through from RB Salzburg into Borussia Mönchengladbach, excels at training youth, excels at changing his formation. I've seen him play 4-2-3-1, diamond, and three at the back. And I've seen him change the shape of his team specifically to cater for certain opponents with great success as well. So I'd say he's probably about the best manager Dortmund could possibly have attracted in this situation. So it's an automatic win, in my opinion. Mm.
It was pretty bad. It was like the worst kept secret in football for a few weeks there. And I think it came to the point it just had to come out in the open, like what he was going to do, because his own club deserved the respect of that. And I think Dortmund needed to know that Terzic wasn't going to be in this job for that much longer.
I think you've got to tell Haaland and Sancho that he's not going to be around.
Well, that's obviously
longer.
Part of it as well. But you know, the first job for Dortmund, and it's Terzic's job, is to make sure that they're not in the Europa League next season. This entire episode is about the Europa League, but Dortmund at this rate might be in this conversation by that point. But look, Rose went into the Gladbach dressing room and broke the news to them. And, you know, apparently some of them feel quite betrayed, because a few weeks ago when the rumours came out, he kind of assured them that he still had big plans at Gladbach. Obviously, they're into the knockouts of the Champions League, and they've got a big game against Man City coming up. We'll have to see now how this affects the mindset of the team. And ultimately, of course, Gladbach, they've been on a great trajectory. They've had some really good times under him. What comes next? Now, one thing that I've heard that they'll look at is, don't forget, Marco Rose came from RB Salzburg. Gladbach might well be looking back at RB Salzburg to see if they can get certain Jesse Marsh to come on over. Look, I don't know if he would go for that, but it's interesting. It makes sense that that's the kind of coach that they're going to go for. So we'll see what they can do. But yeah, really interesting one. And at least Dortmund fans have something to look forward to on the horizon. And then in the meantime, it's just absolute desperation, hoping that somehow Terzic can get this team to claw out enough results that make sure they qualify for the Champions League. Because at the moment, that ain't looking likely.
I mean, I guess the thing is that they've played each other twice now in the Bundesliga, so that they won't have to face each other again in that
respect. They've got a cup game coming up, haven't
but
they?
But they do have a DFB Pokal quarterfinal on March the 2nd. They're currently on the same points, right? They're both on 33 points, 3 points off Leverkusen, who are in the Europa League spot right now, and 6 points off Wolfsburg, who occupy the final Champions League spot. I guess, you know, you make a point there, Dean, that it's important to tell people what you're doing because you don't want to be keeping people in the dark, and especially important for Dortmund. But you do kind of get the feeling that it comes down to the last day and Gladbach are 1 point ahead of Dortmund in the race for that fourth spot. You know, what starts playing on people's minds? And, you know, we saw this in various things before. We saw that with Stefan de Vrij, didn't we, Sam? When he moved from Lazio to Inter Milan. We saw this when Niko Kovac was announced as the new Bayern manager before the season ended at Frankfurt, and there were games between them at that point. It was all just a bit mad, a bit mental. It starts to bring up narratives that probably aren't true, right? You'd expect that whatever happens, Marco Rose goes through the rest of this season trying to win every single game as Gladbach manager because he is a professional and he will do his job. But it starts to bring out narratives that people are like, oh, we've been betrayed. And it does feel occasionally when they announce these things early. Same with Upamecano, I think, going to...
But the big one for me was when Mario Götze was at Dortmund and he was basically announced as a Bayern Munich player for the following season. Just before what? Oh, yeah, the Champions League final between those two clubs. That one really got me. Very strange stuff. Is it a German thing? I don't know. Most of the examples we have here, Stefan de Vrij aside, are Germans. They are so organised and they get this stuff done so early. You know, Upamecano confirmed Monday. Marco Rose to Dortmund confirmed on Tuesday. This happens quite a lot. Maybe it's just the drawback of being super organised, but I'm sure they've all made their peace with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a lot of work for Marco Rose to do. And we got a message actually from one of our listeners, Joel, who messaged to say, can we do the five things that Marco Rose needs to do when he joins Dortmund? And I said, no, because we have no idea currently what those five things are going to need to be. But it might be something that we come back to in the summer when we have more of an idea of exactly what
Haaland,
Rose will have to do.
Sancho. Keep Reina and start winning some more. There you go.
Thank you, Dean. Yeah, it's always nice to have Dean here.
Yeah, this all becomes much clearer once we get to the end of the season. We know which competition, European competition, Dortmund will be in, and we start to get a look at the futures of certain players, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Right, should we get on to the Europa League? I can't wait any longer, I'm afraid. After the break, we're going to be doing a load of mini rankings about the world's most exciting club competition. Don't go anywhere.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Welcome back to Ranks FC. It's time to get into the Europa League. Sam, lots of mini rankings, I imagine, because there's a lot of ground to cover here. 32 teams and a whole load of excitement.
Yeah, lots of ground to cover. So similar format to what we did last week with the Champions League. This time we're a little bit more timely. We're in the correct week previewing this stuff. But hey, our schedule gets the better of us sometimes. So what I've done is I've ranked the top three obvious candidates to win this tournament. And the way I've defined obvious is I've basically taken those names from Odds Checker's top 10 in the betting odds, because everybody's idea of obvious differs, but the betting odds are probably a fair way to do it. So the top three candidates to win based on Odds Checker's top 10. I've then gone for the top three dark horse winning candidates, and I've taken those from outside of Odds Checker's top 10. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? There was actually a thought process that went into it. And then finally, I've gone with the top three must-watch teams. Just vibes. Good times and good vibes. That's all it needs. So we'll just round off some of the other really interesting teams in that section, and I'll open the floor for Jack to throw in a load of stuff about a Portuguese team that's doing bits or something like that.
I'm just going to throw in players. I can just have an extra segment at the end for just players who are vibes. Let's get to it, because otherwise we're going to run out of time, because there is a lot to get through. So over to you.
Okay, so obvious winning candidates. And at number three, I'm going to put AC Milan. Very serious contender for this trophy. A team that has spent basically the majority of the season at the top of the most competitive and high quality Serie A in years, and that has to be considered, that has to be respected. Over the next couple of weeks, I kind of expect Milan's title challenge, the Scudetto challenge, to slip a little bit. They've probably hit their glass ceiling. I don't think they can outlast Inter or Juve for the Scudetto, and I think that will become more clear over the course of the next month. So that makes the Europa League like just even more important, and just as important really as I think we all thought it would be back in September when this all kicked off. This looked like a real opportunity for them. They've progressed through the group no problem. A really talented and determined and together team with good leadership figures to guide through the young'uns. You've got Kjaer and Zlatan at the front and the back, and the rest of them are all children, but it's fine. They're all together. They're playing really well. They've had a very recent blip. Losing to Spezia is not a good look, but for the most part, Milan really haven't done too much wrong this year. They're a very strong team, and we've got two potential added bonuses here in the case of a Milan Europa League win. The first is that I get a prediction right, which is always a positive. And the second is that Dean gets to feel like even more of a proud father.
I think Milan, like I was thinking about like what kind of side we can expect from them, and obviously how they're going to balance out this push for Serie A, which has got to be the priority, right? Got
Derby at the weekend.
They've got Derby. Blimey, that's a strange game to be playing. is Wayne Rooney know about this? I was looking at it. I was like, Mandzukic here becomes a really interesting option for Milan. And I'm wondering if, like, obviously they needed another alternate option in attack anyway, but I reckon just play Mandzukic in all the Europa League games. Like, he needs to be your starter. I think you can trust him, right? Don't know in Serie A that he's going to be starting that many games. And I think in the Europa League, you just give him that responsibility and say, listen, you are the guy that we want to help lead us to glory in this competition. I think he would kind of thrive on that. He's 34. He's been at so many clubs now across Europe that he's got great experience, whether it's Dino Zagreb, Bayern, Atleti, Juventus. You know, he's been all over the place. And now at Milan, I think that he'll be a real good guide for them. This team, obviously, you know, they haven't kept up the momentum that they had since New Year, really. They've had a couple of blips, haven't they? So let's see if they can kind of even out. And Mandzukic, yeah, is the guy that I'm looking at to kind of be the catalyst for them.
Yeah, Mandzukic is like 34. I think a lot of people will probably wonder like how fit he can possibly be. But actually ended up, I went to Turin a couple of years ago for Juventus versus Porto. And I ended up having a few glasses of wine with one of the Juventus fitness coaches. And he was raving. Yeah, I know, it's a weird story. Raving about Mandzukic's physical condition and his determination and his will to be in the best possible condition. You know, even when he's injured and told not to train, he will sit inside and watch the team training, but he'll also just be on the exercise bike for like 2 hours. Like, the guy is unbelievably determined. And I think some people probably look at Mandzukic coming out of the Middle East at 34 and thinking he's a bit washed. I don't think that's in his personality.
No, I agree.
I like this shout. I think this is where he comes into his own, isn't it, for Milan. We've talked about him being a calming influence on the squad. We've talked about him having, you know, that winning mentality and really starting to kick on in terms of bringing that experience to the table. But this is where you'd imagine if he's going to get starts, he's going to get starts. You know, this is where he starts to become part of that wider rotation, and he'll want to prove things to everyone as well. And now that Inter are probably now favourites to win Serie A, especially the fact that they don't have a European competition to worry about in this end. And Sam, as you said, being 1-0 down to Inter is basically the worst position to be in world football right now. Milan will look, I think, at the Europa League as a huge opportunity because, you know, while they won't give up that title chase by any stretch of the imagination, and you can't, you know, I imagine that how this plays out is maybe dependent on how that derby does end up at the weekend. If they lose to Inter and they go 4 points behind then and suddenly the tables are flipped, do they then focus their energies on trying to win this and making sure that silverware is achieved in what has been a remarkable season for them? Because this then starts to look like the best opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and we've got a good opening fixture here against the team we can't pronounce.
Zvezda Zvezda.
It's something like that. Since I was born 100 years ago, I've called Star Belgrade. Why do I need to... I'm not changing, especially because the second part of their name should be a capital Z, surely. The first name is Shvena, fine. Zvezda, Z-V-E-Z-D-A, and there's no capital Z. I can't compute that.
It is a separate word. It should be a capital.
It should be capital letters involved. That's
obviously, I apologise.
I
don't know if we have any listeners that from Belgrade absolutely cursing me right now, and I apologise if there are.
I hope not. I love Belgrade. Belgrade's my favourite city in Europe. It's a wonderful place, and I'm drawn back there on regular occasions.
Even you call them Red Star Belgrade.
But even I call them Red Star, I'm afraid. This one is just too much of a mouthful, although I will try. But look, yeah, that's the Milan game. They have the red side of Belgrade in their sights. And you'd imagine that losing that would be a body blow to Milan's season, you know, especially given current circumstances.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. But they won't lose that. So it's fine. And then we're number three in this list. And we're going to go to number two now. And rather than steal your words, Jack, I think I'll just hand this one over to you, mate. It's Napoli.
We're back on Narrative FC hype, are we? Napoli won this competition, as many of you know, in its prior form as the UEFA Cup in 1989 during their golden period, led by the late, great Diego Maradona. He scored in the first leg of the final as they beat Jürgen Klinsmann's Stuttgart 5-4 on aggregate. They're up in the favourites because of the quality of this squad. But as Sam pointed out last Friday, the Juve win, well, it may well have kept Rino Gattuso in a job. There's a sense that there's underperformance now in a squad that boasts not only club legends in Lorenzo Insigne, Dries Mertens, but also top-level talent in Irving Lozano, Kalidou Koulibaly, Fabian Ruiz, Alex Meret, Diego Demme, Timu Bakayoko, and, of course, club record signing Victor Osimhen. His injury is perhaps the get-out-of-jail card for Gattuso. Andrea Petagna, hard as he works, is not quite the same player and stylistically very different to Osimhen's explosiveness. And his injury return was cut short by a positive coronavirus test. You know, when you luck's out, your luck's really out. Yeah. But he came back against Juventus, a huge boost for the Partenopei. And it's easy to see why, because when Osimhen has started this season, Napoli have won over 70% of their games. Without him in the squad, that drops to just 55%. They're 10 points off the pace in the Scudetto hunt, although they do have a game in hand. They're out of the Coppa Italia after a semi-final defeat to Atalanta, and they've lost the Supercoppa final to Juventus. The Europa League now represents their only realistic chance, I think, at silverware in a season that's aggressively emotionally charged after the death of Diego. They'll be playing in the Argentinian stripes in the newly named Stadio Diego Armando Maradona. And with a returning star striker in hand, I wouldn't write them off.
I wouldn't either. That's why I put them second in my list of possible winners.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. Well, they're the reasons I think they might win it.
Absolutely. I mean, this is annoying as hell because they got Granada in the round of 32. And I just think that was wrong from UEFA.
They got the draw wrong.
Yeah, they should have done it again, I think, when that happened. It was right at the end of the draw as well. And I was watching all the teams come out of the hat. I could see about six teams left and we were there and Napoli were there. And I was like, oh, come on. And to be honest with you, over the course of January, you know, Napoli really faltered, as Jack talked about, with no Osimhen and a couple of other injuries. And I didn't expect them to beat Juventus this weekend with their third and fourth choice centre-backs and having seen David Ospina slated to start in goal and then withdrawn during the warm-up, which meant Meret had to go in. So, look, Meret's a pretty handy second-choice keeper.
I like Meret. I think Meret should start.
I agree. I think he's probably better. But the preparation of the team was that Ospina would play. And so to be able to deal with all of that, no Koulibaly, no Manolas, and then your starting keeper gets wiped in the warm-up and come away with a win against Juve, who had been on a 5 or 6-game win streak, was absolutely not what Granada needed whatsoever.
No.
So probably. It's really annoying. But I expect Napoli to come through that round of 32 tie. And obviously, because of their presence in this list, I would not be remotely surprised if they go on and win this game. Not only because of their overwhelming quality, but also because it's the only trophy they've really got a shot at. And, of course, the spirit of Diego Maradona is channeling their drive towards a trophy.
Right, who's above them at number one then, Sam?
Well, it's going to be Manchester United, isn't it? They are the bookies' favourites, top of the odds checker list. And while I do obviously find it very difficult to trust United at points, it's also very difficult to look past that on-paper quality. If you want it in simple terms, I guess I just looked at all the teams and I thought, well, there probably isn't a better player left in this competition than Paul Pogba or Bruno Fernandes. And that gives them an immediate leg up on the competition. It gives them a difference maker and two world-class players in a competition where most clubs don't have any at all. Yes, there's a fragility to this team. That fragility means that they basically can't compete with the likes of City for a title chase, for a Premier League title winning spot. But in a series of one-offs and a knockout tournament games, pretty formidable. And then you add in a few other bits. You know, Luke Shaw is playing fantastically well. Aaron Wan-Bissaka looks very good at the moment. Rashford is obviously excellent. Cavani leading the line in a Europa League charge. Like, there's just no doubt that they've got major players here. The majority of them are in form. And you may not have them as your number one. You guys, I don't know how you feel about this. And to the listener as well, like, you may not have United as a number one, but you can't really get away from the fact that they are a serious contender here and an automatic top three in this tournament.
I mean, Sociedad, when the draw was made, I was like, oh, that actually looks to me like one of the toughest draws they could have got here. Yep.
It is.
I do think it is. But then I discovered that Sociedad actually scored the fewest goals in the group stages. They were all very, very low scoring games. But yeah, Sociedad also pretty hard to score against, aren't they? So United, they have to go and make a statement in this game because this is, as we say, one of the toughest games they could have got. And if they win this, they could pretty much prove that they could beat anyone. What does make me laugh a little bit about the odds checker list is that there are four English teams left in this tournament and all four in the top five in terms of favourites. That's how biased it comes to when betting lists are made. It's like, well, the English teams are better than everybody else. Is there anybody that could at least compete with them? Yep, Milan, we'll put them fourth. Man United favourites, Tottenham second, Arsenal third. Arsenal are not better than AC Milan, and there's no way you could say that Tottenham are more likely to win the Europa League than like half the teams on this list. I cannot believe that they are second favourites. That's ridiculous. Anyway, rant over.
Yeah. Well, Mourinho has form. He has form in this competition. So perhaps. I mean, the argument maybe that there's not a better player in this competition than Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba is perhaps undersold by Harry Kane being also in the competition, Sam. But I'll leave that slide for now. I don't mind this shout because I think that United do have a really good chance of winning it if they get through this tie. And I, at the moment, I'm not completely convinced that they will. And I'll talk about Sociedad later, but I think that's perhaps why I wouldn't have them at number one, because they have the trickiest tie by a distance at this point in the competition. And I would say that Real Sociedad are probably, you know, not far off being a top 10 contender themselves. And in that, you know, in that form and with that said, then you start to look at this, but I suppose if you're going to win it, you have to beat the teams that are also going to win it, and therefore
neutral
United have an early test.
Neutral venue in Turin, you know, like that takes something away from Sociedad's chances, I think. Like, I'd say that, you know, it doesn't favour either team, but if you were to say which one is that's most likely to help, I'd say it's probably Man United. So, I 100% think, like, you have to see Man United as favourites. Like, they're second in the Premier League. They've been in really good form. Like that front four, like we talked about on Patreon the other day, when you see, you know, Greenwood, when you see Rashford and Fernandes playing behind Cavani, like that is lovely. That is a lovely front four. And if that's how they line up, then they should win the competition, to be honest.
Yeah, I can see that. I think, I mean, what I thought was interesting, Sam, is that you said that Tottenham are second there. I think Leicester City should probably be higher up than Spurs and Arsenal. Quietly, I think Leicester are my favourites to win it on the condition that they keep Jamie Vardy fit, because I don't think there's many defences that are going to be able to deal with the pace and power of Vardy and Barnes, the creativity of James Maddison, Youri Tielemans, and the formidable wall that is Wilfred Ndidi, Ricardo Pereira, Fofana, Schmeichel, whoever plays out of Justin and Castagna. So
not Justin, mate, unfortunately anymore, but yeah.
Led, you know, and led by one of the five best coaches in the game right now, in my opinion. So I think Leicester are up there I would have them in my top three quite easily, quite comfortably, I would say.
So you're taking Milan out? Or you're taking United out?
I would take Napoli out. I love Napoli, but I wouldn't have had them in my top three.
No!
I would have had Napoli fourth. Leicester, United, Milan, Napoli.
Ranking, Leicester is your favourites.
Ranking the biggest
Leicester will win this
competition.
Yeah.
I think Leicester are going.
Ever seen.
I think Leicester are going to lose to Slavia Prague.
No, you don't. You're just saying that. You're just saying
that.
No,
I'm not.
Like you keep saying that Leeds are going to get relegated. You're the biggest troll.
I'm not actually.
You are the biggest troll that I know.
They've got a forward called Abdelazima, and I was watching a show the other day about him and Slavia Prague. His quality. He's got 18 goals in 26 appearances, 11 in the league from 14 games, 3 from 6 in the Europa League. They seem to just float the ball over the top and he flicks them in with his head from the 3 or 4 goals that they showed in this doc. And what was interesting is that Slavia Prague have like been built. They brought in this manager and he completely just rebuilt things a few years ago, just brought in all these youngsters, players that were completely untested. The fans basically didn't know who any of their players were a few years ago. They were like, trust us, we're building something. And they've all grown together. And it was really interesting to hear the story of how they've grown as a team. And they're just like, we can beat Leicester. Why not?
Oh, and I was now who's a sucker for narrative?
I am with you. Slavia Prague are going to beat Leicester.
Okay. Jamie Vardy calls and says hi.
Jamie Vardy's 12 goals and 5 assists from 17 starts say hi.
Yeah, exactly.
Leicester are focusing on the league. They could win that.
Right. On that note, let's move on, shall we, Sam?
Yeah. Yeah, we should not give Dean any more airtime. Let's move on to dark horse winning candidates. So taken from outside of Odds Checker's already systematically debunked and pillaged top 10 betting odds list. At number 3, I'm going to put PSV Eindhoven, who actually ended up in 20th in this odds list, which I thought was a little bit harsh. I appreciate they only leapt into first place in their Europa League group at the very last moment, sadly at the expense of Granada. And perhaps that's fooled a few maybe English-centric betting companies anyway to kind of dismiss them a little bit. But this is Roger Schmidt. This is another coaching product of the Red Bull system. His teams are always steeped in those tactics emanating from the Red Bull tree. So everything we talk about with Julian Nagelsmann, with Jesse Marsh, with Marco Rose, and him in particular, his is a Hasenhüttl, very similar to Hasenhüttl's 4-4-2 high pressing, high line, quick transition. So it's a more like a 4-2-2-2. Committed to playing out from the back under all circumstances. The goalkeeper is basically a third centre back in build up. He's exactly like Andre Onana is for Ajax, although this man's name is Yvonne Mvogo. The host of forwards they have, we've talked about Daniel Marlon plenty on the Patreon podcast. They have Eren Zahavi and Cody Gakpo, Ihattaren, Noni Madueke, all different, all exciting. You've got Ibrahim Sangare knitting it together from the base of midfield. I would class PSV as a must-watch. We'll get to those a little bit later, but I didn't want to tread on the same ground. But I think they're dark horse candidates. They're a team that play with such a system that if it does go right for them in succession, if the cards do fall, they can beat pretty much anybody despite the quality gap. And I think PSV are a candidate here for sure. They're a very good team.
Okay. Yeah, nice. I like this as a shout because it does, weirdly does feel like a proper outside shout this year. And, you know, you've obviously laid it on as to why they will be down the betting odds and why they will be. But they feel like a kind of a side who can hurt people and hurt teams that are bigger than them, I think, which is a kind of key here. If you're going to be an underdog side getting to the final, it's probably not going to be by controlling games and by completely dominating. It is by hurting teams when you get those opportunities. And that array, that attacking core is, you know, an absolute delight. And they will cause problems for people.
Yeah, they will. I'm excited to see them. I mean, I hate them because they pipped Granada to first in the group. But I wish them the best of luck all the same, because I am, of course, objectively neutral and a reasonable adult human being who doesn't hold grudges.
Right. Who's next?
Number 2 is Shakhtar Donetsk.
Nice. Now,
yeah. I mean, again, we refer back to these odds. 17th in the list. Guys, they've come out of the Champions League group stages. And okay, they were pretty...
They beat Real Madrid.
I think these people draw up the top 10... or whatever, they like draw up a list and they're like, oh, Shakhtar, where do they play again? What country are they from? Oh, put them down. Pick a number. They're not going to do it, are they? Honestly, like, just shows up like so much of the mentality that I've talked about recently of like, but when I was talking about like the Manaman thing last week of the ignorance of like people in this country, like, this is it again. Shakhtar have got so much pedigree to go into a tournament like this and do well.
I know. Not only have they dropped out of the Champions League group stage and finished above Inter in Group B, which was the craziest group of all time. Last season, they made it to the semi-finals of this competition.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got beaten by a very good Inter Milan side, who went on to be beaten marginally by Sevilla side, but actually don't think there's a team in this competition that measures up to what Inter Milan are right now, and maybe even Sevilla, to be fair. So that was just a rough draw, but they got really far. Like, the pedigree is undoubted. So, and this is basically like the same team that finished in the semi-finals last season. And yes, they're up and down. Like, they did the double over Real Madrid in the groups. They also lost 10-0 combined to Gladbach. So it's a weird flex.
Yeah, but that was Marco Rose. We've already talked about how brilliant a coach he is.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, Group B was just this beautiful shambles, wasn't it? I thoroughly enjoyed it. But on Shakhtar's side, like I say, it's a similar team. It's Marcos Antonio controlling in midfield. We spotlighted him on our Friday Patreon. He's a wonderful tempo-setting, controlling midfielder. The defence is full of good young Ukrainian defenders who are like 23 and under. That's Valery Bondar at centre-back, who was a major force in Ukraine's under-20 World Cup win, and Viktor Korolenko at left-back. The Brazilian right side of Dodo and Tete, I love, not just because of the symmetry of the names, but because they're also very good at football. They've got the silver-haired fox, Marlos, pulling the strings from between the lines at number 10. And the big news for Shakhtar is that for the first time in over a decade, they have a goalkeeper.
This is Sam's longest standing agenda. The biggest agenda that Sam has ever had. The anti-Pyatov agenda.
Well, for the first time in over a decade, they're not using that clown Pyatov in goal. They've got somebody else, Anatoly Trubin, who's only 19, but has looked pretty good and started 5 of the games in the Champions League group stage and was pretty busy, but pretty good. I looked through my old tweets in preparation for this just to see how much of an agenda I've got against Pyatov. And you cannot accuse me of not being consistent in my views, because I have been horrible to Pyatov since 2013. I've questioned his pedigree. I've asked why he's a professional footballer. I've suggested that Shakhtar's only downfall during the Fernandinho and Willian era was the fact that they had an idiot in goal. So I don't know what's come over me with this one, because usually I like to think I'm quite professional, but he has just wound me up for a long, long time. Anyway, it's gone now. So
he was quite important in Pyatov's The Champions cartoon, though, because he found Goltron, didn't he?
He did, yeah. A vital role in history, not necessarily to do with football, but there you go. But yeah, Dean, I kind of agree with you. I think they probably get underestimated because Eastern Europe, and particularly Ukraine, is one of the only remaining genuine blind spots in football analysis at this point. Even people like ourselves who try to keep a wide eye on this sort of thing, we do struggle a little bit with, you know, behind the Iron Curtain sides. And
totally,
it is a bit of a but with Shakhtar, there's no excuse, because we get to see them literally every year in European competition. Yeah. They've always got a host of Brazilian players that they're nurturing into stardom, and they've always backed them up with basically Ukraine's best goalkeeper and defensive setup. That's almost always a recipe for success. So Shakhtar are obviously a contender in this wide open Europa League format. That's the beauty of it. A team that finished in the semi-final stage last year and was in the Champions League group stage this year is going to have something to say.
Mm. Haven't lost a league game either.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you want to know an interesting fact about Shakhtar? I've got a couple of interesting facts today.
Go on then.
One of them is, obviously, they won the last ever edition of the UEFA Cup in 2009. In the 12 seasons since then, they have qualified for the knockout round of the Europa League in 7 of the 12. But of the remaining 5, they've qualified for the Champions League knockout round in 3. And they've reached 2 semi-finals. That's unbelievable going. They are, aside from Sevilla, probably this competition's most successful side, I would argue.
Yeah, I mean, they're sneaking into that kind of Jack Collins praise radar in the same way that you always talk about how Porto consistently make it out of the group. It's I can see what impresses you.
Yes, making it out of groups, yeah. That's consistently making it out of the group stages, if you come from a not top 5 league, is an incredibly impressive achievement, yeah. I would say. And I will stand by that. Also, Shakhtar don't have a home ground. They haven't played in their own home ground, the Donbass Arena, since 2014 because of current political situations. They've been nomadic for 7 years. They had a spell in Lviv, followed by a spell in Kharkiv. And this season, they've moved again to Kiev. So all of this mad consistency in this competition has been on top of the wild inconsistency of where they actually play. Yeah. So even
if their fixtures get moved around due to COVID restrictions, it's not really going to bother them, is it?
Well, there is that. There is that. Yeah. Good. Right. So fair play to Shakhtar. They are unfairly demonized in this odds list.
40 to 1.
I mean, They're probably insane. Not going to win it, so I wouldn't put money on it. But, yeah, but still, it's way too long.
15-2, yeah. And Shakhtar are 40-1. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, you're not
wrong.
If
they played each other tomorrow, I'd back Shakhtar.
Not wrong. Sam, who's in at number one?
So at number one, I've gone for Lille.
Okay.
The thing about Lille is they don't concede any goals.
Yeah.
They've done that thing that City did. Very clever. Sworn the oath, haven't they? Thou shalt not concede goals. And look what it's done. The results have been amazing. They've kept six clean sheets in a row. And to illustrate how those have actually genuinely been like truly earned, I took a look at our old friend FB Ref and took a look at the expected goals figures. And the last match that they played in which their XGA, so their expected goals against figure, was one or more, was against Celtic in December.
Yeah, they lost 3-2.
Yeah, since then, 12 games, the XGA has been under one, and more often than not, it's been under 0.5. They are consistently completing 90 minutes against teams and either just not letting them shoot at all, full stop, or the shots that they do allow are such low quality that they're never going to bother them anyway. Mm. So they've got a really strong defensive unit built on Jose Font, the immortal man, and Sven Botman, and Mike Maignan in goal is very good as well. And then up front, it's kind of like pick four of these eight very impressive, very good attackers. You've got Jonathan Okone and Jonathan Bomba. You've got Jonathan David. Wait, are they all called Jonathan?
Jesus. When I was doing my research for this, I did notice that there are an unhealthy amount of Jonathans kicking around the place.
This is madness. Imagine calling out in training, Jonathan, and there's six people look around. It's ridiculous. They're all from the same position group as well. But Yusuf Yazici is around. Burak Yilmaz is around. They play a 4-4-2. It's not really like PSV's 4-2-2-2. This is a more traditional kind of flat two banks of four with a striker and a support striker. David is the perfect support striker, and they use a target man up front as well. Although Yazici, mate, I couldn't tell you what position he plays if I tried. I don't think he could. He is a man without a position, he's unbelievably productive. No, he's a cam, but he's like, in theory, he's an attack. He does all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about this because he was actually one of the players to watch, but I think it's probably worth doing it now. He basically started out on the right-hand side of this Galtier 4-4-2 and was basically rubbish. And then they moved him into the middle and he just turned into a baller. It was like, okay, and he's always paired with either Jonathan David, who's finally started to come good after a tough start to replacing Victor Osimhen, or veteran countryman Burak Yilmaz, who leads Lille's overall scoring charts despite being 35. So fair play to him.
There's one for the Indian summers debate, actually, that Ben Jarman asked about on Monday.
Yeah,
Burak Yilmaz is having a proper Indian summer.
Mm-hmm. He's been brilliant. But I think what's perhaps most interesting about Yazici is that he's obviously this competition's leading scorer, you know, despite the fact that mostly all his goals for Lille have come in this competition, apart from like three, which is kind of mad. So he likes this competition, obviously. He scored that hat trick at the San Siro. Not many people are going to claim they've scored a hat trick away at the San Siro. And he is basically part of this attacking line. And like you say, Sam, there's so much talent here. I was looking up the two Jonathans, Bamba and Okone. They've picked up 26 goal involvements between them this season already. And, you know, then you've got Luis Araujo and Timothy Weah and Isaac Lahaji. There's a lot of people rotating here and a lot of talent that they can call on. And in the middle, there's this kind of mad re-emergence of Renato Sanches. And then Boubacar Soumaré is in there, and Benjamin Andre and Xhaka, who have all kind of added a little bit of experience to that Sanches and Soumaré pivot. And then obviously Botman is paired with Jose Font. So there's just loads going on at Lille. It all's really nice.
It does. Yeah. This is a serious team. Like, they're top of Ligue 1 and it's not by fluke. The underlying numbers are fantastic. The attacking talent is serious. And the tactical system, it just doesn't put the team in danger of conceding really ever. So was pretty shocked to see them down in 15th on Odds Checker's list.
Yeah, it's not often you see
anything you see on there, mate.
It's not often you see a team who are top of Europe's big five going under the radar, right? But I think maybe it's the fact that while Lille are sitting pretty at the top of Ligue 1, their excellent season is perhaps flying beneath the radar because of the turmoil at PSG and Marseille, which is taking up most of the headlines out of France.
Maybe. And like, we have to make a point here, which is because we made the point for Manchester United. I put them top, but yes, they have to play Real Sociedad, who were a very good side. Lille have to play Ajax in the round of 32, and it is a serious test. I know, obviously, like, there's been problems registering Sebastien Allaire for the crew, for the knockout stage, which I could barely get through that sentence without laughing because it's so dumb. And I don't know if Andre Onana can play. Obviously, he's been suspended for a year, but if they appeal
Thursday.
I mean, yeah. So you've got your basically your top your number nine and your number one out severely weakens Ajax. Ajax are a really good team, and this is a hell of a round of 32 tie. It's potentially the best game on offer that we've been given, and a really, really good team is going to have to drop out here at the round of 32 when these two are quarterfinal quality at minimum, and it's a massive shame. And Lille have got that first immediate hurdle to climb over, so it might be a bit bold putting them at number one here, but I just think the disparity between how good they are and how they've been talked about, treated, engaged, I think it was too great not to really highlight it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think this is a nice shout. A nice shout, Sam. Well done. I thought Villarreal were going to be here, but I've just found out that they are ninth. So they actually don't qualify for this bit. But bear in mind, they have Unai Emery in charge. This is the UEL is sometimes called the Unai Emery League after his resounding success in the competition. So yeah, I mean, I guess they probably should deserve a mention at least.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
they're not going in the exciting teams bit, that's for sure.
No, not at all. I mean, can you win a game 1-1? I'm asking for Unai, not anyone else.
You can actually in Europa League. Yeah, you exactly. can. If that's an away 1-1, then you can.
Well, there you go. That's why he wins it all the time.
Excellent. Right, should we move on, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, we now move to must-watch teams. Just the fun bits that we can, you know, we can fill in the gaps
just
with.
Just vibes now, let's go.
Just vibes. And at three, I'll put RB Salzburg. So, I mean, look, some of the most engaging and enthralling games that I watched during the Champions League group stage involved Salzburg. I mean, they had Bayern in their group, which was quite handy because you got to watch them against top tier opposition at least twice. And their frantic style of play and the impressive, like ridiculous cartel of youngsters they've got means it's actually really hard to catch a bad Salzburg game. I don't think it really actually exists. I'm not sure it's possible. I'm not sure they're capable of producing them because it's always part entertainment. And for Salzburg as well, it's partially a scouting mission. So whenever you watch them, you should be enthralled by their frantic style of play, but you should also be looking at two or three players very closely and figuring out which top European club is going to come for them next. Now, entering the knockout stage, obviously Dominik Szoboszlai has gone to Leipzig, and one that actually passed me by as I was doing my January transfers was that Jerome Onguene left during the winter window as well. He went to Genoa. But there's still plenty to look at here. Enoch Mwepu and Mohamed Kamara in midfield are both gems. And Mwepu is this ridiculously dynamic dribbler. Serious engine. Absolutely incredible. And Kamara, combative, but with a wonderful passing range. He'll switch the play all day and all night if you don't press him. And if you do, well, he'll roll his sleeves up and he'll just get after you. It's great. And then they've got Seka Keita, Patson Daka, Mergin Berisha up front. All different types of forwards. Berisha's got the movement. Daka's, I call him the Zambian Jermaine Defoe.
He's literally a gunman. He scores goals in his sleep.
Yeah, he's awesome. So there's loads of players to watch here for Salzburg. They always play entertaining games. And I guess a team like this, set up like this, with this kind of youthful enthusiasm and this like this no-fear attitude, like they genuinely, I thought, were better than Bayern in one of the games they ended up losing about 5-2-2 in the group stage. They just kind of got edged in the end just through inexperience and just not making those chances count. But they will create a boatload of chances against Europa League opposition. And if Daka and Keita and Berisha can take them, then they arguably belong in the dark horse section. I just thought I'd hold them off a little bit and maybe just try and put the focus on their fun.
Yeah, but they're playing the Dementors, in that they'll just the life will be sucked out of them by Unai Emery's Villarreal, and that'll be that. They'll just draw 1-1. that's unfortunately what's going to happen. All the like joy and fun of Salzburg will be sucked out. No, that's not a dig at Villarreal. They're exceptionally good at what they do, but I can't imagine them letting Salzburg run riot.
So this could really test my theory. It's not possible for Salzburg to produce a dud of a game. Unai Emery steps forward and says, "Challenge accepted."
Watch this. Absolutely. Watch this. We'll see. Who's in it too then, Sam?
Real Sociedad.
Yeah.
Real Sociedad. Let's give him a little bit more of a mention. I can hand this one to you if you like, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, La Real, a neutral's delight. Would you want to know another one of these interesting facts this time about Real Sociedad?
I'm loving these interesting facts.
So although it's neighbours Athletic Club who maintain a Basque-only policy for players, the core of this current Sociedad crop is incredibly locally grown. And this isn't a new thing. Real Sociedad are from the Gipuzkoa province of the Basque Country. And incredibly, Sociedad have never played a game without a Gipuzkoan in their starting 11 and have started only one Gipuzkoan just four times in their history. They've played a full starting 11 of local players 295 times. And in terms of the here and now, 16 players in this current first team squad are products of Zubieta, La Real's cantera, which roughly translates to quarry, where their players are carved. It's the name of their academy. So there you go. Fun facts aside.
I did actually know that. I know you don't believe me, but I genuinely
You did not know that.
I actually did because of, do you know why? La Liga TV.
It was one of the adverts.
It wasn't one of the adverts, but I turned it on just to watch the adverts and just happened that a programme started afterwards about Sociedad.
There you go.
It is interesting, actually, the story of them. And they have got a real crop. And that is what they were talking about, actually, is the unity of the club right now is like a huge part of what they've been able to build. And not only that, obviously, they've got some real talent in there at the same time. And, you know, when they've had people like Odegaard, that have come into the group and just like help them grow as players, like you have somebody like that come in, even if they're only there for a short while, it helps everybody grow. And obviously, they tried to get him back because he had such an influence on them. But yeah, they're growing and growing. Look, if they beat Man United, could easily win the competition.
Yeah, I think that's
pretty much.
This is it.
That's where we are. Like, we don't expect them to do that. But if they do, which is possible, then they could win it.
Also, for those that aren't familiar with this, the La Real squad, and which players are from the area, just take a look at those names. Oyarzabal, Iaramendi, Gorosabel, Elustondo. Those are local products. That's what those names look like. It's a fascinating language.
I mean, random facts aside, this Sociedad team are just loads of fun. As we said on Monday, Alexander Isak smashing records. Youngest player to score in five La Liga games on the spin. Since Ronaldo Nazario for Barcelona. Oyarzabal, as you mentioned there, Sam, an absolute joy to behold. There's a reason City wanted him in the summer. Christian Porto's quite good value on the other side as well. And 19-year-old Ander Barrenechea is starting to make a name for himself as well. I think one of the really interesting people in this, lads, is Mikel Merino, who has been re-establishing himself as a serious player for the last 2 years or so. It's following kind of those weird spells at Dortmund and Newcastle. Do you remember them? He just like rocked up at Newcastle for a bit and everyone was like, what's going on?
He was amazing for like a month.
Yeah, unreal.
Absolutely amazing. And then rubbish. For ages.
He's only 24. I'm not quite sure how that's happened, but he is. And he earned himself his first full international cap for Spain at the back end of 2020. So that's nice. And now he's playing in front of club captain Asier Illarramendi, who's returned. He brings sort of that steel in the middle. And like you say, the back four, there's a kind of youthful core in there of Zubeldia, Elustondo, Gorosabel, Ramiro. And then just on the left-hand side, Nacho Monreal just looks over and kind of just deals with all the experience by himself. And on top of all of this comes the returning David Silva. In the words of, you know, the three explorers in the forest, the wizard approaches. His first start of the weekend in the win over Hetafe after a hamstring injury over Christmas, which coincided with their worst spell of the season, exactly the news Manchester United fans will almost certainly not have wanted to hear. I had that fact earlier about Osimhen on Napoli, right? This is unbelievable. In the league, with David Silva in the side, Sociedad are picking up 2.23 points per game. Without him, it's 0.9.
Yeah, 0.9. They had that horrible run, didn't they, over November and December where they drew all the games. And I'm sorry to keep going on about this, but the second game of that run, they played Villarreal and drew 1-1. So I don't know if they caught something, but six draws in a row after meeting Unai Emery's Villarreal, it can't be a coincidence.
No, I agree. But yeah, look, I mean, his creativity is obviously going to be so poor. If they get past United, and it's going to be an incredibly tough task, we said, but this could be on. And I think this is perhaps the trickiest tie around in that this wouldn't be a game that's out of place in the Champions League round of 16, would it?
No, sure. I don't think so. Like, look, Real Sociedad are consistently sort of top six quality in La Liga, top four really for most of the season. Fourth highest scorers, and according to some pressing metrics I was looking at earlier, second most intense pressers in La Liga, second only to Eibar, who were notorious pests, that lot, unbelievably difficult to play against. So this is an intense side. This is a real matchup test. This is a difficult evening's work for United over the course of 180 minutes. Like, Sociedad look good on the ball, but they're awful to play against off the ball. And with Silva back, with Oyarzabal fit, and with Isak in the form of his life, yeah, this is a really tough one. And Real Sociedad are well worth watching.
Absolutely. Who's the one ahead of them, Sam? I'm surprised they haven't been top.
Yeah, it's Chief Chaos Merchants by Leverkusen. No, so yeah, you can't be surprised about that. I mean, Christ, the Bundesliga has a bit of a tactical discipline issue at the moment, I think. And well, Bayer Leverkusen don't have a tactical discipline issue. They are just intentionally, tactically carnage, chaos, chaos pit, all the words that we always use. I mean, I just don't really understand half of what they do, half of the movements. But Jack, I'll throw it to you again a little bit because you love Bayer Leverkusen and they are your babies. And Florian Wirtz is so young, he could literally be your baby.
Well, he couldn't.
He could.
But okay, no, I don't think so. I don't think it's possible physically, I'm afraid. Sorry. Yeah, I mean, they're just so much fun, aren't they? They're just always involved in just like weird, chaotic games. And like at the weekend, they threw away a 2-0 lead in the 89th and 92nd minute against bottom of the table Mainz. You're like, well, what are you doing? Can you just not do that, please? But it's pretty much on brand for Leverkusen now at this point. Before that, they beat Stuttgart 5-2. They've had some wild results in recent weeks. And basically nothing changes at Leverkusen. They're always just scoring. If you put a bet on every single week, both teams to score in a Leverkusen game, you would come up at the end of the season. I guarantee it. Absolutely guarantee it, because it's just they're defensively a bit mental. They're offensively incredibly mental. They have so much pace in this side now. In Diaby, Bailey, they added Demarai Gray to that at the weekend. Florian Wirtz, as you mentioned. Lucas Alario's found his goal-scoring form. He's, I think, just got up to double figures for Leverkusen for the season now. And it's just a kind of bizarre group of players who don't appear to have any defensive work rate from an attacking perspective. They've added now a flying right back in Jeremy Frimpong to try and add some more offensive width on the right-hand side, which is probably the last thing they really needed. But, I mean, you can't deny that it's incredibly good fun. And I have no doubt that whoever Leverkusen come up against over the course of this competition, goals and entertainment will flow. All right, I want to just add one last thing. We were going to do a players to watch segment, but we've covered Yusuf Yazici already. He was one of my two. I wanted to just chat quickly about Wenderson Galeno, who plays for Braga. He's the top assister in the competition so far, so this isn't actually that niche, Dean. But that shouldn't be anything new, because he was also the top assister at this stage in the competition last year as well. Okay. He's 23 years old. He joined Porto's youth self at 19, but after two loan spells at Portimonense and Rio Ave, he was deemed surplus to requirements of the Dragão and made the short hop up the road to Braga. Since that move, he's nabbed 13 goals and 21 assists in 72 games for maybe the best nicknamed team in the world, Os Arquebispos, the Archbishops.
That's class. That is class.
Really good, isn't it? Pretty much
it
one goal or assist in every two games. And our friend Marcus Alves, a journalist who specializes in Portuguese football, once compared him to Hulk in an article he wrote. And it's a nice comparison. He's incredibly explosive, and the way that he drives with the ball at his feet makes him, well, one, an incredibly useful counter-attacking weapon, but two, a joy to watch him full flight. The Europa League seems to be where he sparkles. So great matchup with Roma for Braga, and that's one game to watch, and he's definitely one to watch for them.
It is a game to watch. I saw Fonseca talking about this one. He's very emotional about it, very emotional. Place where holds close to his heart. I've seen he's one of his best mates in charge of Braga, so he said they're going to have a nice bottle of Italian wine after, but it'll be after Roma see them off.
It's very, very rude that he hasn't gone for a bottle of Portuguese wine.
He was very clear the fact, like, I will be taking him Italian wine.
That's like such a power play. Braga's not far from the Douro Valley. Like, it's literally Portugal's winemaking region. That's very rude.
That is so bad.
Gonna pack it in his bag. So there you go.
There we have it. Right. Well, that's pretty it. That's it for our Europa League section. We've had a lot of fun, I think. We've enjoyed ourselves. There's been
I've learned a lot from you two. Thanks, lads.
Thank you, Sam, for a wonderful set of mini rankings. We'll be back after the break for Melon of the Week and the Gibberish Rankings. Don't go anywhere.
Fair play and fair value. It's what playing at William Hill is all about. William Hill. It's who you play with. Gamble responsibly.
Welcome back to Ranks FC. It's time for my favourite part of the week. Dean Jones, the floor is yours.
It's time for Melon of the Week. This week's Melon of the Week is Ipswich Town fans.
All of them.
Everyone.
Well, I can't narrow it down yet because the story hasn't been out for long enough to figure out how many of them and which ones it was. But you'll see why in a second. So, do you know what? I'm actually just going to read out the article here because it was my friend of mine, Sammy Mockwell, wrote it for the Daily Mail. And this is Melanish fan behaviour. I understand right now we're not allowed in the football stadiums. And as a result of that, we can't let the team and the management know when we're not happy about things going wrong. But Ipswich fans found a way. Here's the headline. Ipswich Town forced to suspend training after supporters start a fire at the club's training ground during protest against Paul Lambert. Now, listen, I don't like Paul Lambert. I've interviewed him many times, didn't like him on any of those occasions, but not sure he deserves to have this happen to him. A group of disgruntled fans upset at the direction the club are headed under Lambert threw flares into the club's training HQ, which the club say then caught on a layer of mesh netting and caused signage to catch fire. They had to suspend training because of the smoke billowing across the pitch, and there's now an investigation going on to try and catch them. Yeah, this is Melanish. I mean, you could make signs, you could wait outside with a few boards and shout Lambert out. There's many ways to make your point known. Probably setting
burning
fire
the training ground down is not one of them.
Trying to burn him is not the one. You know, as I say, I don't like him, but I want to burn him.
Where were you the other week when Marseille stormed their training ground and set up flares?
That was bad, but that's typical for Marseille, to be fair. They do that all the time.
Also, they didn't actually start a fire. Because they know how to do it, because they've done these protests many times before, they're well aware of keeping the flares away from the mesh signage.
These Ipswich fans amateur at flare throwing. They've set fire to their own football club.
That is Melanish stuff. I've actually got an honourable melon to throw into the ring here. I'm not trying an honourable melon. Yeah, I'm not trying to say that these Ipswich fans aren't worthy of Melon of the Week. But a little story from my house. This morning, actually, Rach turned around to me and accosted me. Maybe the wrong word, but there was definitely a lambasting happening. And she told me in no uncertain terms that she did not appreciate the overwhelming stench coming out of the fridge and tried to single it out as my particularly stinky cheese and told me that I'd have to remove it or do something with it. So I investigated this claim, and it turns out that not only is it not the cheese that's stinking the fridge out, it is her melon. She's bought melon and it's gone off in the bottom of the fridge and it stinks. She's trying to blame it on the cheese, but it is an actual melon in the vegetable drawer.
Actual melon of the week.
Unbelievable.
That is unreal. Like, you need to get a picture of her holding that melon. Because this is new territory we're stepping into here. We've never had an actual melon of the week that's caused an issue.
Yeah, it's quite.
That's groundbreaking, mate. Well done. I'm surprised there was no Insta story to go with this, but cool.
Yeah, I mean, that one should have been one for the gram. Right. That is the gibberish alarm. And it's time for the gibberish ranking, Sam.
Yep. Okay, this week I have ranked the...
Things in my fridge that stink.
Oh, not quite. I only have two for that. I need a third one. This week I've got a top three, and I've ranked the greatest... small pleasures in life. In at three is Jack Collins. Just kidding. So these are the little moments, the ones that won't make a headline for the day, the ones that you won't report to your friends and family when they ask you what happened, but they're just like really satisfying little moments that
we're
going to
do a podcast on it.
A good day. In at three is when you pick up your laptop to do something, just a small task, and it actually has enough battery to allow you to do it. This is no small relief, because the feeling of picking up your laptop to do a little task and you get that out of battery sign flash up, demoralizing as hell, because you've got two options. You've either got to move to the charge point, which means that you actually can't do the task that you wanted to do where you wanted to do it. And very often, let's be honest, you're probably just trying to do something idly because you've forgotten to do it and you're just on the sofa watching TV. That means you've got to move. You've got to leave. That's a nightmare. Or you've got to bring the charging point to you, which is double the yardage, because you've got to go and get it, and then you've got to go and bring it back. And it just upsets your rhythm.
And then you forget it. You leave it there. So the next time you're up wherever you're plugged in, like normally plugged in, it ain't there.
Yeah, I know. So look, I'm not asking for a lot here. I'm not asking for 100%, not 90%, not even 80% of my battery. Just a really reasonable amount of battery.
20% is good.
30 is just stress-free because there's no chance that your task will bleed into the 20s, and therefore it starts to look a little bit orange, then a bit red, and you start to look at, oh, have I got enough time? Just give me 30 to 40% and I'm good.
Your tasks are obviously a lot shorter than mine. When I'm doing these tasks that I'm generally doing on my laptop, it's I need at least 70% of the battery or we're in trouble.
Well, you should just keep it plugged in all the time, but I'm very conscious of my battery's long-term health.
Okay, you know? Very good.
And keeping
very
it plugged in will play with that. So with number two of the greatest small pleasures is the first time you pull on a new pair of socks. This is very satisfying. And it reminds me I need to buy a bunch of new socks. But the brand new sock is silky, it's smooth, it slides. No, it doesn't slide. It glides onto the foot. No resistance. It's a joy. But you wash it one time and it's gone. So if I was a millionaire, and I'm not, but if I was,
I don't think you have to be a millionaire.
Well, to only wear a pair of socks once, yeah. I think you'd have to be quite rich.
One and done, sock bin at the end of the bed, and then straight into the trash, wave in the new batch. Pay Jack Collins £5 an hour to throw the old ones away and order the new ones in, and I'm a happy, happy man.
I'm sure I read once that David Beckham does this with underwear, like only wears it once.
I think he came and denied it at one point. He had to come out and deny it, because I remember the story as well. But yeah, I think Bex had to come out and deny that one because it was a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah. You got a stash of brand new socks that I just save for when I really, really want a pair.
Just if you're having a bad day.
There's currently 8 pairs sat in my drawer that have never been touched. They're still in the wrapper, all nice, set to go, all fresh. It's a really nice feeling.
That sounds amazing.
That is
amazing.
Good
new socks in the bank. All right, number one is warm cookies fresh from the oven. Oh,
you only have this because you liked it the other day. This is unfair.
No, I mean, this has reminded me how much I love it.
Yeah.
I mean,
this isn't
the recipes.
An everyday win. everyday wins. I make cookies 365 days a year. Do you? All right, mate. This is not an everyday win.
Well, not today because it's pancake day. But otherwise, sure. I mean, in lockdown, we've done a lot of baking here, mate. A lot of baking. But the recipes, this is the problem. The recipes always say to wait for the cookies to cool down before you eat them. Now, let me let you in on a little secret, Rank Squad. The recipes do not want you to be happy. Because if you've got to the point where you trust that recipe and you let them cool down, you've missed out on the best bit, my friends. And we've got to the point, as a result of this revelation, that we now make quite big batches of cookie dough. But we only then chop them up into sort of sets that would make about 4 cookies, freeze them, and then you pop that one batch on, chop it into 4, put 4 cookies in the oven, bake them, 15 minutes later, you eat them all in one sitting. And then tomorrow, when you want more cookies, you get the next bit of batch, you pop it into 4, you put it in the oven, 15 minutes later, 4 more cookies. There are no big batches, none of this nonsense, none of this save that tomorrow, none of that put it in the biscuit jar, none of that put it in a container. No making 12, eating 4 now and eating 4 tomorrow. You make 4 at a time, maximal enjoyment, warm cookies from the oven every single time.
I remember the first time I discovered the joy of this is when I was like 10 or 11 and went to Disney, and our hotel was like one of these Disney hotels and stuff. And I remember like discovering American warm, fresh cookies. Honestly, no idea how many I ate over those 2 weeks, but it was I was figuring out like what time the fresh batches were coming out. I'll be right down there waiting. I'd have like my $5 and I'd be like, Mum, gotta go, it's time for the cookies. And yeah, I've never forgotten it. It's had a long lasting impact, but I've never ever made cookies at home myself. I don't think I could live up to that.
So a similar situation here is that every time I've ever been to Paris, and you know, you boys know that I'm not a morning person, right?
But and you hate Paris because the time's different.
It's too dark in Paris. We hate Paris. But actually, well, accepting Ballon d'Or trips with Dean, every time I've been to Paris, I've actually tended to wake up at very early in the morning, because going down to the patisserie and getting fresh pain au chocolat in Paris is just another worldly experience. And it's along the same lines as the warm cookies, but my God, is it just different stuff.
Yeah. I'd say my everyday thing is going downstairs and there's either a nice freshly boiled kettle for a cup of tea, just ready to go. It's done. That is my big win. That is a good start to the day if that cup of tea is ready to go. Jack will be with me on that.
100%. The other one is waking up like a couple of minutes before your alarm.
Oh yeah.
Like if you just for years.
If you yeah, I suppose you get up at like
you've got
two.
A human alarm.
Yeah, you have a human.
I've got Dylan doing like a Big Daddy splash on me.
Yeah. Well, I get yeah, if you wake up and you're like, I know my alarm's set for like 8 o'clock and it's like you look at the thing and it's like 7:56 and you're like, ah, oh, I'm not gonna be tired when the alarm goes off. That's a huge win.
That is
huge win. So yeah. there's my contribution. Well, thank you, Sam. That was great. Apart from cookies are just not an everyday occurrence, and I refuse to accept that as an everyday thing. But I might move in. apart from that, I think that's pretty much us done. And all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
And thank you very much, Sam Tai.
Hope you all enjoyed Pancake Day. I did.
I hope you all enjoyed Pancake Day as well. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks SC. We hope you've enjoyed this and you're looking forward to the Europa League now that the warm-up is out of the way and we can get on to the main course. This has been Ranks SC. Thank you so much for listening as ever. Please keep sharing it with your friends and anyone else who you think might like it. And please keep giving us ratings and reviews on iTunes if you can. It really does help us to grow. Take care now, Ranks Squad. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Fair play and fair value. It's what playing at William Hill is all about. William Hill. It's who you play with. Gamble responsibly.